This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 359 for May 7th. It also happens to be Thursday, not Wednesday. We're recording a day late because schedules are weird and I screwed up. So if you're wondering who I am, my name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out and talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. And joining me this week, because he volunteered to fill in, Mr. Lou Page is here from Zombies Ate My Podcast and at Busy Zombie Lord on all the social media that matters. Hello, sir.
Howdy.
It is a miserable rainy day. Tell me a fun story.
I had my dishwasher die.
Fun story, Lou. Fun.
Oh no. It's going to be fun because so we've lived in our house now. We're going on 2.5 years. We knew the dishwasher was going to die around the time I broke my leg. I started running things in the washer, and you know, hear the motor that pumps out the water going, you're like, oh, this isn't going to last much longer.
Yep.
This isn't going to last much longer. And so I thought nothing of it. When it dies, I'll just go get a new one. So it died. And I drained all the water out of it. I went to Lowe's down the street. They're one of the priority stores that are open. The appliance people are more than happy to help you. I said, all right, I'm going to order a dishwasher. It'll be a piece of cake. And then I, in my brightest thought, I'm going to take a look and maybe I can get the old one out for the guy. And then when he shows up, I can just have him put the new one in. And I started to pull out the old dishwasher and I realized when the old one got put in, after it got put in, the people who owned the house before me tiled the floor and they tiled it with like 1/2-inch thick tiles.
Oh my gosh.
So there's about an inch and a half drop down for this dishwasher and no cabinet room. So I don't know how to get this dishwasher out. And I'm panicking. Erica's freaking out. She thinks that we're going to have to get a whole new countertop because that's the only way we're going to get this thing in and out is if someone rips out the countertop. And I'm like, relax, honey, calm down. We'll figure this out. I'm sure that this guy, the installer, will know how to get this out. So for like a week while we're waiting for this dishwasher, the two of us are like, what's going to happen? Oh, what's going to happen? This is going to be way more expensive than it's supposed to be. Guy comes in and I played stupid. Like I didn't realize what he was going to have to do.
Nice.
And a guy comes in and he's like, oh, this is going to be a problem. I said, oh, really? I'm sorry. What do we got to do? And he goes, hold on, I got to go out to my truck. He comes out with a reciprocating saw. I don't know if you know what that is.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. It's got like an 18-inch long blade on the end of it. And Erica looks at me and goes, I'm about to cry. What is he going to do with that? I said, I don't know, but let the man work. He climbs down on the floor. He had to cut the feet off of the old dishwasher to get it out. And then he brings the new one in and he looks at me, he looks at the dishwasher, and the new dishwasher is bigger than the old dishwasher. And he goes,
yeah,
I don't know how we're going to get this in, but we'll do it. And I said, okay, sure. You tell me how we're going to do it. He goes, well, we'll figure it out. And so he managed to unscrew the countertops and we didn't have to lift the back of them. We just needed to give it enough wiggle room, about 1/2 inch.
Right. Just to kind of squeeze it in.
To squeeze it in.
Yeah.
And we managed to get it in, but he thought that this was going to be like maybe a 45-minute job. He was here like 2.5.
Yep. Don't you wish that there were standards, you know, that people would build their houses by to make sure that appliances would stay? And then, in part, it's kind of a good problem in some ways, because some of the appliances that people buy, if they're good appliances, they last forever. But then when the new homeowner takes over, all the appliance dimensions, like all the new appliances, they're all different. They don't adhere to the same measurements because it's either more efficient or cheaper or whatever. And so the little hole that you have for your dishwasher that has lasted 10 years or 15 years is not going to fit the new one, right?
Yeah. And then he ran a test cycle. Everything ran great. It worked. Everything's awesome. I loaded her for the first time after he left. I hit the run cycle. I went downstairs because Eric is working down here in the office from home. We're both working from home. And I said, oh, it's so nice. It's so quiet. It's like, this is great. Da, da, da. I came upstairs to ding, ding, error. And I went, oh no. Don't tell me it's going to have to get, I'm going to have this all pulled out again. Please don't. I just got it in. And so Erica had to stop working. She came upstairs with me. And the two of us spent like 45 minutes running through every troubleshoot in the book, trying to figure out what was wrong with it, because it wouldn't drain the water. And I'm like, don't tell me I got one with a blown pump. I just got rid of one with a blown pump. Don't tell me they just gave me one with a blown pump. I can't handle this. And then Erica goes, I don't know, what are we going to do? And I said, hold on, I just thought of something. And I climbed down under the sink again. I grabbed the hose that runs from the dishwasher into the under the sink, and I pulled on it, and there was a kink in the line. And that's why it wasn't draining. And then all of a sudden the dishwasher goes, kicks itself back on, drains all the water out, and starts running again. And Erica goes, I'm so glad you figured that out, because if we had had to have a technician come all the way out here to figure out that there was a kink in the cable, I'd have killed you.
Yeah. It's funny, like, you know, owning a home, I don't own one now, but from the friends that have, you know, like you've got the things that people have done previously, you've got all these learning experiences that happen when you get your first dishwasher replaced, or you have to buy a new fridge and figure out, you know, why the old one is running and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
it's always a learning experience. There's always something. It's very often what I found is, from hearing stories from like Peyton and some other friends that own homes, is that it's usually a very simple problem. Now, sometimes you have to have the whole thing replaced, but when new stuff doesn't work right away, it's usually a fairly straightforward little thing. I just installed my birthday present on my gaming PC. I picked up a couple things on Amazon, and one of the things that I included in the order was a set of J&D RGB LED light strips. And they're nothing fancy. They're addressable RGB strips with 21 lights on each strip, which, for those of you that don't know, it's about 30 centimeters. So it's about the length of a window in your tower. So you can kind of put one on the top and one at the bottom or whatever. And I installed them. They worked. They did all the things that they were supposed to do. They did rainbow lights. They did, you know, all the stuff. And then I had to restart my computer for one reason. I don't remember what it was. And when the computer came back on, the LED lights didn't work. And I was like, well, that's weird. And I was like, well, that's weird. I said, because I know that they worked. Like, I know that they worked before. And I shouldn't have to start the ASUS motherboard, what's it called? Aura, the color management software, every time I start my PC, because the LEDs are just an addition to the motherboard. The motherboard already has lights on it. Like, it already has a little light thing that does its own little rainbow thing and whatever. And that was working. So I double checked the BIOS, which is a quick forum check, said, look, I'll have you check the BIOS to make sure that you've got LED lights are on. I thought, well, the LED lights are on for the motherboard, but I would imagine that the addressable RGB controller on the board might have a separate switch. So I went and checked the BIOS, but nope, they were both on. And it turns out that there was a setting in Windows. It was like a lighting activity thing that had to be on. Now it's on now, and it's supposed to be on by default. Now, I don't know whether these settings are going to stick. So the next time I restart the computer, I'll find out. But I'm really hoping that I don't have to go into my task manager and turn on the lighting manager every time.
You shouldn't. It should stick.
Yeah, it could just be that it was off because there were no RGB strips. But But yeah, like it's usually a fairly simple thing. But like, I didn't know where that setting was in Windows. I didn't know that thing was even part of the task manager. But again, I've not owned a Windows PC that has had RGB capabilities. The last time I had a Windows PC, it was just a box. There was no glass window inside of it. Like, I mean, none of that mattered 10, 15 years ago. But I have to say, I've always looked at the RGB stuff like, it's nice to have. It looks really cool. I don't really spend enough time in front of like a gaming computer to care about that kind of stuff. I was always more focused on things like, you know, the graphics card and, you know, monitors and things. However, yeah. I don't have a lamp for that side of the room. And as I've been streaming more and it's streaming at night, it's hard on the eyes to have a bright monitor in a dark corner. And so I've been looking to do something else. And I thought, you know what? You know, I'm ordering this book. And I'll get into that in a second. I was ordering a book for myself. I got some donations on a birthday stream, and I was instructed that I had to do something fun with it. I was not allowed to do practical things. So I thought, well, what these RGB strips are like, what, $25 for two strips? It seems pretty reasonable. The Canadian, by the way, that would be more like $17 US. And I thought, well, whatever. I know precisely, you know, what I'm going to do with these. I did a little bit of research. I found out what strips I wanted. There's RGB and addressable RGB. So I got addressable, and I got two strips with it. Plus the package comes with like two extenders and a couple of connectors and stuff like that. So I thought, cool. And my case happens to have these little, I'm not even sure what to call them. They look like little rubber starfish. And they're at the back of the case. And the idea is that if you want to take something that's wired in the case and bring it out. So if you had an external hard drive or if you had some other thing that you had to connect like these, I could do it. So I thought, I want to have some lighting behind my monitor. So I stuck one of the RGB strips to the back of the monitor. And then I have the other one along the base of the case on the inside. And the panel has a smaller window than the size of the panel. So it hides the strip. You can't see the LEDs at all. It just looks like the whole thing lights up. It's really cool. And it now has a light behind the monitor. It just shines right up on the wall. And it's a white wall, so it turns the whole wall turns whatever color the LED is, which is great. And because it's all addressable,
that helps.
Yeah, I can do things like rainbow patterns. And it's not quite as customizable as my my Corsair keyboard, but it's pretty good, I have to say. I quite enjoy it. Now, the Aura software says that it's supposed to switch your lighting based on video games you play, but I've not been able to get that to work. Now, I haven't tried to troubleshoot it, so I haven't like gone to Google and said like, hey, how do you get this to work? But it would be really neat, like for example in Minecraft, and you're up in the overworld and you're playing around in sunshine and green grass, if it was a bright color, and then if you went into the Nether, which is all red and lava and spooky, if the whole background of my room went red, that would be awesome. That would feel really, really cool.
I will tell you right now, those things are always great. Like I have a Logitech keyboard, and it's got all LEDs, and you can change the colors and make things work. And it advertised to me that, oh, depending on your game, we'll rechange your color depending on the game you're playing, so that you know the keyboard map out no matter what game you're playing. Yeah, no, it's the biggest waste of time and hardest thing to do. I just give up, and I have it set to a default setting.
So I have a Corsair keyboard. I have a Corsair RGB keyboard, and it does precisely that. The problem is that the Corsair software, the Corsair IQ software, is a hog. Like, it is the most inefficient, terrible tax on your system.
Yep.
But it works. So I have like a No Man's Sky keyboard, I got a Minecraft keyboard, and I got a Satisfactory keyboard, and they're all different colors. And No Man's Sky specifically was very fun because I made it look like the cockpit of my starship. It was really cool. And it works though. It says like, hey, do you want to assign an app so that when the app is running or when the app is active front and center on Windows, that we switch the keyboard? And it works like clockwork. My mouse does the same thing. My Razer mouse does the same thing. You know, I switch to Minecraft and it goes green, and I switch back to my desktop and it goes blue. But it's nice because sometimes you want to have like different hotkeys for different things and that sort of stuff. And I quite liked it. I'm just disappointed that the Corsair IQ software is such a poor design, because Corsair actually has a plugin that allows you to control the Aura RGB compatible devices from Corsair. So you could use just the Corsair software to set up your motherboard light, your RGB light, your mouse light. Like, you could use the whole thing. But because the software is so craggy, and because I've been having so many problems with my PC, I deleted it. I just haven't installed it again. So I installed it once long enough to, thankfully, the Corsair keyboard, it's the K70 low profile keyboard, and it has an onboard memory. It can remember up to three light settings. Now, the problem is that it only remembers one complex one, and then the other ones are just basics. So, but at least with the touch of a button, I've got like a little SD card in the thing that just remembers, like, you know, Minecraft setup and then two other different keyboards, which is too bad. I was kind of hoping that I could put the three main games I play all on the keyboard memory, but it doesn't remember all the fancy lighting. It only remembers a couple. So, but one of them, the main one, which is I play, is Minecraft, and that's got all the, you know, lights. And I mean, I don't really need it half the time. I'm not looking at the keyboard anyway. It's just fun to have. But it adds to that mood lighting. Like, it adds to that, you know, like if you're doing some satisfactory stuff and you're in a crazy factory and there's all these cool lights going off, it's nice to kind of have that kind of stuff going. And, you know, it sounds like it's all fun and games, but from an ergonomic, sort of side of things, it's really nice to have a light behind the monitor because it's easier on the eyes. You know, like, you don't have this dark contrast. You've got this glow that's happening behind the monitor. It's not a bright light bulb, but it's just enough that when you enter the room, it's not like pitch dark.
And it's also not coming from the other direction and putting a glare on your screen.
Exactly. Now, for my other systems, I have a lamp on my main work desk, like where I work and draw and like do my artwork and editing and stuff like that. I have a lamp behind the Mac that works fine, but I have to reach around and turn it on. And like, just there's all this stuff being controlled by the RGB thing on the motherboard is great. So I'm, like I said, it's really cool. I can sort of now understand why people do this. You know, like if you've got the option to have a couple extra bucks and make your PC look really cool. And I think it's less about lighting up the PC and more about lighting up the workstation. It's more like lighting up your gaming area and just kind of like, you know, I showed it to a friend. I showed it to my friend Britt, and her response was like, it's very zen, because I sent her a video of like the colors slowly changing. And I thought, you know, I never thought about that. It actually does. It's very calming, you know, to have these pretty colors, you know, because at first I thought, you know, with the keyboard, it has like a rainbow setting. And I thought, nah, I'm probably not going to do the rainbow setting. But it's like, you know what? More often than not, I'll let the keyboard just do its own thing, you know, on the rainbow setting until I use it. But when it's just sitting there, like when the screensaver's on the computer, like I just let it do whatever it wants. I don't mind the bright, pretty colors. It's like Christmas lights. You know, everybody likes Christmas lights, you know. Yeah. So that kind of stuff is really fun. Right now, I have the whole thing set to an ambient gradient, which is like sort of like a sunny yellow down into like a forest green. So it's all very summery, but it all changes so slowly that you don't really notice, and nothing goes like bright yellow. It's more like grass green to like pine green, kind of like back and forth, which is nice because it just kind of feels like summer and bright and colorful and stuff. So yeah, that's been a lot of fun. And in addition to that, or what that came with, I should say, the purchase that I added that onto was the World of Warcraft Chronicle Volume 3. So that was the birthday purchase for myself. I had a few people donate, you know, on stream and say, hey, buy yourself something nice. We really appreciate what you do. And so I thought, you know what? I just finished volume 2. I'm rolling right into volume 3. So I'm reading about the Lich King and how he came to be, and reading about how Azeroth is rebuilding after the Second War. And like, it's very, very cool. I'll have more to say about it later, because I've only just started the first couple chapters in it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that. I've been basically not coming into the studio after dinner. I've been just unplugging on the couch and reading. I got a number of books actually for my birthday. So I've got some comic strip collections from Zitz for my mom, and I got this book that I got for myself and the community, you know. And so it's been super, super cool. The one thing that I'm missing is the big purchase finally happened. I picked up a Secret Labs Titan chair. I think I talked about this with Megan a couple of weeks ago, so I won't go into any details, but I did buy it. It is on its way, or rather it will be on its way as of May 22nd. So I've got a bit of a wait. A lot of people ordering chairs for their home offices, I would think. So that's coming in. I will let people know what I think about that probably here on the podcast when it's actually here. For now, I'm just looking forward to be sitting on something that's a little bit more comfortable for longer, you know, work sessions, editing sessions, that sort of stuff. Should be good. I'm hoping that it works out, because much like you with ordering a dishwasher that maybe sort of kind of fit in the hole that you have, I had to order this based on only a lot of YouTube reviews, watching a lot of stuff, doing a lot of research. I have not sat in one before, and I can be kind of picky about the chairs, but the reviews are that it's firmer than you would expect. And that to me is good. I don't want to sit on a cloud. I want to sit on a nice, firm, but comfortable chair. And I'm hoping that it'll work out, because it's designed for tall, bigger people. So I'm hoping that it's going to work out well for me. But yeah, because I have been doing a lot of sitting and watching stuff.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Have you like racked up a lot of watch time on things, or are you doing mostly games?
Well, I don't think we talked about it, but Erica and I finished Picard around the same time you and Alistair about it.
Cool.
And then as soon as that was over, Erica went, I want to watch TNG now. So for like the last month, we've been marathoning through all of TNG.
Nice.
And we finished that the other night. I won't go into details, but man, that season 7 is a mess.
Is it really? Is it that bad?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's awful. Like every week, it's like every other episode of season 7 is like, oh, great. Here's that like political commentary episode on something that doesn't make any sense. Oh, here's the episode where Dr. Crusher's grandma gets possessed by a ghost. Oh, great. Here's an episode. And you know, like every episode, it's like, oh, please give me a Q episode. Q sucks, but at least it's a Q episode. And it'll be like, oh, it's a Q episode. Awesome. Okay. And I mean, it ends. It has a really nice ending. Like the series finale is really great. It's a two-parter, but that was a slog for me. I literally would put my headphones on, play my game, take it off, and she'd be like, "Hey, look at what just happened." Oh yeah, I've seen this episode 50 times. Never mind.
Yeah. Was there a single season that's better than the last? Like, was it a strong fourth? Is it a strong fifth?
I'd say seasons like 3, 4, and 5 are probably the best. They're the most Star Trek.
Yeah.
And even season 6 isn't bad, but you can definitely tell that season 7, they were running out of ideas. I don't know if it still exists, but there used to be a Twitter account called TNG season 8, and whoever owned the account, they would just literally tweet the name of an episode that doesn't really exist, and then a plot line. And the plot line would be the dumbest thing you could think of, but you could totally see them making it.
Nice. It's funny that you mentioned Star Trek, because I'm not going to talk about them this week. I've got other stuff to talk about, but I actually have been watching a lot of favorite old movie series for two reasons. One, just nostalgia, and sick of stuff sucking and wanting to remember stuff that's good and watch some things that I remember being good. But also sticking with series, because then I can just watch like, you know, 1, 2, and 3, and that's 3 weekends in a row that I can just kind of like watch whatever. And I recently watched the 2009 Star Trek, directed by J.J. Abrams, Star Trek Into Darkness, and then Star Trek Beyond. I had seen Beyond fairly recently on home streaming, but I watched it again. And those are better than I remember. I always remember liking them, but they're good, including Into Darkness. Into Darkness got some bad PR, but I don't think it's a bad film.
It's an okay movie. There's a couple of things in it that bother me, but it's not like they don't break the movie for me. I just go, oh, yeah, they're going to do that thing. Okay, yeah. I guess I can go with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I think, too, that Star Trek Into Darkness kind of has that Force Awakens vibe, where like, it's familiar. It's a little bit too familiar. It's a little bit too safe. They really didn't think too far outside the box.
Yeah.
And they could have, but they didn't. And I think that's probably the beef for me. But other than that, like, I still found it a fairly entertaining film. I really liked Beyond. I thought Beyond was good.
It's probably my favorite.
Yeah, like especially the callback at the end with the music and stuff, like how they beat the swarm of ships with the music, like that stuff I thought was really good. But yes, like I've been going back and watching kind of like stuff that's safe. Do you have anything that's like new that you've been into?
While working, I got my email clicked and Netflix informed me that Jerry Seinfeld had a new stand-up special on Netflix. And you know, most of my job is sitting in front of a computer all day. And I was like, I can listen to this while I'm doing. It's a stand-up routine. It's not like I have to watch it. I can listen to this. And I won't lie. The first 10, 15 minutes of this stand-up special, I was laughing. It was hilarious. And I was like, oh, this is great. This is great. And then right about, it's an hour long, right about the 30-minute mark, he kind of changes his tone of the jokes and changes the direction of where his jokes are going. And all of a sudden, every joke the last 30 minutes doesn't land.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, these are not funny. Because the whole S special starts out talking about how everything sucking and everything great, they're all about the same. Because the same thing that sucks can also be great. And he gives the example of going to a baseball game and getting a hot dog at a baseball game. Yeah, the hot dog sucks. The bun's too crusty. But while you're eating it, it's great because you're at the game and you're enjoying it. So sucks and great, fine line, but they're the same thing. And you go, oh, yeah, that's kind of funny. Ha, I can relate to that. Okay. And he goes on that goes on to that shtick for literally like 30 minutes. And all of the jokes land. And then all of a sudden he goes into marriage and talking about wives. And I was like, oh, feels like an 80s special now.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, this is retreaded territory that a million comics have done before you that you've never done before. Why are you doing this, Jerry? Stop. And literally every joke from that point on is like, And you can see it in the audience too. They don't really laugh quite as hard as they did the first half.
Yeah. So I thought Jerry's thing was just making something out of nothing. Like that's the whole thing about Seinfeld is they take the mundane situations of every day and they turn them into something that some people find hilarious. I don't like the Seinfeld, the sitcom. I never have.
I don't either. I've never been a fan of the sitcom. I watched it a lot as a kid because my mom watched it and I would laugh once in a while, but I wasn't like a huge fan. And his stand-up has always been very hit or miss for me. But I've really liked his interview with comics in the car.
Oh, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is a great series because it's not stand-up. He's interviewing comedians. Like they're talking about the craft.
I like it because, and I like him, but this stand-up special, it was just like, Jerry, I don't care about your complaints about your wife. That's not funny. Hmm. What are you doing?
Yeah, that's too bad.
And I was like, oh.
I have a hard time with stand-up. Sometimes I'm in the mood, sometimes I'm not. And I find that Netflix, well, we've discussed this before, like when you watch one, all of a sudden that's all Netflix thinks you want to watch. It's just like, Oh, you watch the Dave Chappelle stand-up. Here's 8 other stand-ups recommended for you. It's like, I barely watched that one. I'm not a Jerry Seinfeld fan.
I used to be a really big stand-up guy. I used to love stand-up. And I won't lie, Netflix kind of killed it for me.
Oh, yeah?
Because everybody has a special. And I can watch a special because I like a specific comic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like other comics. I like this person. Next thing you know, all Netflix does is try to tell me that this person is just like the person I watched. No, they're not.
Yeah.
Stop trying to tell me that this person is like the guy I watched. Not the same thing. The Netflix algorithm is just broken.
Yeah. I have one stand-up still on my watch list that I will probably end up seeing because I think it was just something that came across my Instagram. Like, you know, you're doing a search or whatever, and you just get, you know, little stand-up bits. And I find that that's how I consume stand-up. Like I will get lost for 30 minutes watching 2-minute clips of various different comics that just kind of go in this like little stream, like your Instagram stories. Like you'll just get caught up in this little recommended, like, you know, you get one guy and then another girl and then another dude, and they'll be unrelated. They're just a bunch of stand-up stuff. Sometimes it's horrible crap, but you can just skip it. You just like swipe, you're like done. You're not funny.
It's next.
And then you're on to the next guy. And no matter what, it's less than 5 minutes. And so, you know, if it's good, you're like, well, whatever, I got 5 minutes, I'll watch this person. And the comic, I'm actually following her now because I find her very, very funny, is Taylor Tomlinson.
She's come across my feed a couple of times now, and I've just been like, I'm not in the mood for stand-up.
So sometimes her Instagram stories are not the best. Sometimes they're on point, sometimes they're not. But the clips that she's been putting on her Instagram feed from her Netflix special, which just came out like February. So she, when I first found her in March, she was promoting it pretty heavily. And plus she's probably pretty proud of it. And those clips, like, man, they are funny. Now I'm kind of hoping that I've not seen the whole highlight reel. And then if I go and watch the stand up, I'm just like, oh crap. Well, the five hilarious jokes, I've heard them all on Instagram, but I don't think they would do that. I would think that some of this, she talks about like being engaged and breaking off the engagement and relationships. And I think she gets into like, you know, sex and stuff like that. So I don't think she's gotten that kind of stuff on Instagram. She plays those ones a little bit safer. So I'd imagine there's probably a little bit more in depth and maybe some dirty jokes and things on the Netflix special. I don't know. But I do find her funny. There's something about her delivery where she has the punchline, but she does that thing where there's like a second punchline and it's probably... It might not be as funny as the first, but it's...
But you're going to get another joke. You're going to get another laugh.
You're going to get another laugh out of it. And sometimes the second one makes the first one even funnier. So it's not that the second punchline is funnier itself, but it just, it amps up the first that you think you already have, you know, processed. And she does that very, very well. Her delivery is really good. And I don't know, there's something she has... She has, I don't want to say that she has an annoying voice. She doesn't. I think it's just because on my phone, Instagram can be terribly loud or terribly soft.
Oh, it's awful.
Right? Like it's really inconsistent. And so I think that sometimes when I've kind of gone into her Netflix special, which probably has like a really solid audio, I've just been listening to something, you know, watching a video about an animal or something like that. And then I had the volume up and then switches to, you know, Taylor Tomlinson and her Netflix special. And my eardrums are blown out. So like, I'm partly reacting to that going, oh gosh, that's loud. But it's, I don't think it's necessarily that she is bad in terms of being loud herself. I think it's just the clip is loud. But yeah, like it's on my list. I haven't really taken the time to check it out, but yeah, I do. I am hit or miss with stand-up. I liked most of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. I
had to skip certain episodes with certain people I don't like.
Yes, that's what I did too. I was like, I can't remember his name from like Curb Your Enthusiasm or something, but I don't get him. Larry David, I don't find him funny at all.
I don't find him funny, but I think he's an interesting guy. So so I could watch that one with him and it's fine. I don't need to laugh. I get it. But then he'd interview somebody that I like can't stand. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, not going to watch this one. We'll skip that one.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember some of the funnier ones. I really enjoyed Chris Rock, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Because I don't necessarily find him that funny, but he was an interesting conversation. I really liked the Trevor Noah interview. That was really good. And also funny. Like, I mean, and I don't go into them expecting to be entertained in terms of being made to laugh. I go into them as like, well, it's going to be more of an interview. I found the one, surprisingly, the one with Steve Martin was boring. Like I was just like, this is not,
I don't think Steve Martin, I think is before my time.
Mm-hmm.
Like The Jerk came out, I think the year I was born.
Yeah.
And so everybody's always said Steve Martin is funny and some of his early stuff is funny, but to me, he's always been the guy that ripped off the Pink Panther and I didn't think any of those remakes were funny. I'd rather watch the originals.
Yeah.
And so I've never found him, and everybody always goes, oh, his stand-up is amazing. And I've always been like, is it? I don't know. He stopped doing that before I was born. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh yeah, and he put the arrow through his head and I'm like, so he did sight gags? Was he Carrot Top? What are we talking about?
Yeah.
Everybody goes, oh, he's really funny. And I'm like, okay. And then I see interviews with him and he seems like a really nice guy. And he seems like a really interesting guy. But I'm like, he's not funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I think too that, and I haven't read any of his books, but I hear people really enjoy his writing. Like they find him funny, but also poignant. And like, I feel like there's some wisdom. A lot of comic strip creators like his book. I can't remember what it was called. But it, like in terms of like personal motivation, being a creator, being a writer, being an artist that's writing comic strips and writing and drawing every day, like his book about creativity was apparently very good, but I haven't had a chance to read it.
It's like called Born Standing Up, I think.
I think that's it. Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah.
I've heard it recommended to me a million times. And I'm like, yeah, but he's not really my thing. So I'm not going to bother with that.
Yeah. I enjoyed the talk with Dave Chappelle on Jerry's show. But the whole time, I just felt like grabbing Chappelle by the back of the collar and sitting him up straight. Like it was just, it was like, dude, like your chin is on the table. And he's a tall guy, but it's just like, why are you laying on the coffee table? It made no sense. And the thing is with Chappelle, like, it's like half the time I'm looking at him like, is he doing this on purpose? Like, is he doing that? Or is that really how he sits at a table? It just felt so strange. I don't know why.
He's just a strange guy.
He is. Yeah, he is very odd. And it was very interesting to see, having watched his stand-up and then seeing him just talking with Jerry, it was really interesting to see a different side of him, I have to say. You know, it's like when you, I mean, I don't really listen to any celebrity podcasts anymore, but one of the draws for me is sometimes you'll get a really good interview and you'll get to see a different side of somebody. And I'm not the biggest fan of Dax Shepard as a person, but some of his interviews on his podcast were really good, including the one with Ted Danson. Ted Danson was a fantastic interview because he's a family friend of Dax Shepard, and he had this brains to respect him and really get into some cool conversation. And when Danson was talking, he would just let him go. Like Danson was mostly talking the whole interview, and it was phenomenal to learn about how and where Ted Danson grew up and the different things that influenced him and all this kind of stuff. It was really cool. But you know, most of the time I don't get into that kind of stuff just because it's usually a bunch of people like, you know, tooting their own horn.
I don't find celebrities interesting.
Celebrities interesting.
I don't find any of them interesting. Oh, really? You make millions of dollars and you live in mansions. Your life is so different from me. I can't identify with you. I don't care what you have to say. Your opinion is influenced by about 40 other people. You've got a marketer that is selling your brand. I don't care what you have to tell me. You can tell me that this is the greatest pair of shoes you've ever worn in your entire life. Those shoes are $200. Not buying them. Screw you. Get out of my face. You know, that's kind of my philosophy.
Tell me how you really feel, Lou.
But when it comes to stand-up comics, I'm always curious as to where they come up with their ideas for humor. So I can handle any kind of thing where they interview a stand-up comic. But once they get out of that, I'm like, I don't care what you have to say. Mm. Like, as soon as they get into like, well, I'm going to talk on my platform. Nope, sorry. Going to move on to the next thing. Yeah. Don't care about your platform. Everybody's got a platform. Everybody's got a charity event. I don't care.
Yeah, it is kind of tough. Everybody does seem to have their own platform. That's for sure. Well, for me, the last little while, I have been, as I said, going down the nostalgia lane of watching some movies that I enjoy. And a couple weeks ago on the podcast, I spoke about watching the original Jurassic Park and saying, like, you know, how it was just such a different film compared to now. Like, it's the pacing is different because it's like 27 years old.
Yep.
And I was then in the mood for dinosaurs. And I continued, as I thought I would, to watch The Lost World, Jurassic Park.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. Jurassic Park 3, Jurassic World, and then Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Not all in the same, you know, weekend, but like over this course of several weeks, I kind of spaced them out. And I was surprised to find out that Jurassic Park, The Lost World was directed by Steven Spielberg. Because
it's terrible.
It's not awful. A good movie. It's not a good movie at all. I mean, there's some fun one-liners from Jeff Goldblum, which I think is the only reason they made the movie. Julianne Moore is a fantastic actor. I'm not sure why she's in this.
There's all kinds of people in it that were nobodies then, but are people now. And when you watch it, you go, wait, is that Guard the guy from, wait, he's a big thing now.
Yeah.
And he's just like guy standing in the background. And you're like, hey, who's that?
Yeah.
There's like a bunch of that.
Richard Schiff from the West Wing was like eaten in the first 15 minutes. Like it's really, really funny to see. And what's his name there? No, he was in the third one. Yeah, he's in the third one. So Vince Vaughn is in Jurassic Park 3 and he plays like, is it Vince Vaughn? No, he's in Jurassic Park. He's in two. He's in the Fallen Kingdom. Vince Vaughn. Yeah. Nick Van Owen. He plays the environmental saboteur in Jurassic Park 2. And yeah, but it's not a comedic role. Like, it is a straight shooting. He's the camera guy, you know, like that's, he's the photographer. It's what I found so bizarre about the second one is that they capitalize on the people not learning from their mistakes, like, at all. The guy that played, not Roland, Peter Ludlow. Arliss Howard is the actor that played him. Ludlow is like the CEO of the now. He's John Hammond's nephew or something like that. He's taken over the company. And he's drunk. He's drunk most of the movie. And it's like, you've decided against all better judgment to go to this dangerous place on safari. And you think, while you're here, here's a good idea. I'm going to get hammered? Like, it made no sense. And so much of the movie just didn't add up.
And it's really surprising, because when you go into Jurassic Park 3, well, not as good as the first one, you're like, wow, they learned from all of their mistakes of the second one, and they don't do much of the bad stuff they did in the second one.
No, it's true. The Jurassic Park 3, when you get into it, Alan Grant, played by Sam Neill is back. And you're like, okay, we've been here you've been here twice. What on God's green earth would possess these people to go back to this Jurassic Island? Isla Nublar or Isla Sorna? I can't remember which one is which. I think it's Isla Sorna. Anyway, it turns out they played it pretty well. They get tricked. So they're supposed to fly over and just give a tour to these people posing as a rich couple. And it turns out that there's not a rich couple. He's like a appliance salesman from the Midwest that just, their son was lost on the island, and they do a lot of really dumb stuff. But it made a lot of sense in terms of, like, you know, how to get Alan Grant back on the island, because they land against his, like, he's like, dude, you cannot land this plane. And they do anyway. They knock him out. I liked it for the most part. I didn't like that the kid stole the eggs. Like, thought that was kind of dumb. And they did, because it turns out to be the same plot as the first one, or the second one. In the second one, they discover that they're hypothesizing that because of the olfactory cavity in the Tyrannosaur, they probably have the longest scent recognition distance of any dinosaur. And so they steal the baby, and you're like, but if you know, if you're covered in blood, if you're covered in the scent, isn't the Tyrannosaur just going to track you across the island? Which they do. Like, what did you expect was going to happen? You're the one, you scientists are the one that told me this fact, and yet you're ignoring the fact that you've got scent all over you. Like, that kind of stuff didn't really make sense. Right. And then they did the same thing in Jurassic Park 3. They stole the eggs, and then the raptors tracked them across the whole island trying to get the eggs back.
Well, something you should know about Jurassic Park 3 that's not public, it's public knowledge, but it's not talked about much. When the filming of that movie began, like, literally they had cast everything, they only had about 20 pages of a script.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. Like, half the movie is improvised.
Jeez, I didn't know that. It's not bad. Like, it's not a terrible film.
Jurassic Park 3. They literally, they cast everybody. They had, like, a plot outline, and they kind of had what they were going to do, but they didn't really have a script. They were, like, showing up day by day and being like, okay, what's the script for today?
I feel like some of the humor and stuff that they try to shoehorn in was just a little bit 90s. Like, so Jurassic Park, to give people a timeline, Lost World Jurassic Park, terrible title. Just call it Jurassic Park 2. Everybody else does. It was in 97, which is the year I graduated high school. And then Jurassic Park 3 was only a few years later in 2001. So it's just barely out of the 90s. So some of the humor is just pretty lame. A lot of one-liners, still... Even though it wasn't directed by Spielberg, it sort of felt like it was, that kind of stuff. Good casting. Like, I like Annette Bening. Is it Annette? I think it's Annette Bening.
Tia Leone is.
Oh, sorry. Three. Yeah, Tia Leone.
But they're, like, interchangeable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just good acting, you know, overall. Like, it's not, you know, the people that the people that I thought were terrible were like the throwaway, like all the people that you know are going to get eaten were the terrible actors in Jurassic Park 3. All the people that were good actors just made it because, you know, like for whatever reason, they made it through the whole thing. Now, switching gears, get into Jurassic World, which I remember seeing in theaters and I remember liking, surprisingly. I thought it was like, whatever, I'll just go see some cool CG dinosaurs. I'm not really expecting much from the movie. Despite having a very similar plot to the first one, they did enough to kind of make it much better than the previous sequels. It takes things and resets them, but in a familiar way. So you know what you're getting into, but then how they execute that is really good. I like the theme that it switches from environmental protection to greed and exploiting the dinosaurs as weapons. And unsurprisingly, humans have learned next to nothing about dinosaurs. Like there's still, they think they're in control. They think they can control nature. And it's similar to when people think like that, well, whatever, we don't have to worry about the next tornado or the next hurricane or all that kind of stuff. And then Mother Nature says, oh, you haven't seen anything yet. Hold my beer, you know? And I think that that was a pretty good theme. And I really enjoyed the casting in Jurassic World. I'm a Chris Pratt fan most of the time. I prefer him in serious roles, actually. I really enjoy him in this, and they even say it. There's a line that says, "Your boyfriend is a badass," and Chris Pratt does a great, like, animal wrangling, animal trainer, dangerous environment, former military badass, and he pulls it off. He's got his one-liners, but they're not. They're like Lethal Weapon jokes. They're not like meant to make you laugh. They're just meant to, he's just getting out his frustration or his fear by making some cracks or, you know, throwing some digs at a girl that he went on a date with once. Like it's very simple stuff, but it's not meant to be like, you know, rim shot funny. It's just meant to be like character funny, if that makes any sense. The motorcycle scene with Owen riding through the jungle on a motorcycle with a bunch of trained raptors is sick. Like it's one of the coolest things that I've seen in Hollywood, you know, in the last 10 years, 15 years.
It's not a bad movie. I remember I really, really liked it up until like the last third. And there was a bunch of like design decisions they made in the last third that I was like, yeah, I don't really like this. And I could kind of see where things were going plot-wise in the last third. I'm like, they're going to wrap this up, and it's going to wrap up exactly the way I think it is. Yep, it is. Boy, this is kind of predictable.
Yeah, they bring you back to, like, the T-Rex has to have a starring save the day moment, and the raptors have to do their thing. And yeah, it does get kind of predictable at the end. And there's a couple of points at the end of Jurassic World where just like, and you guys were all dead. And again, you were probably dead, but just because the script says so, you're not. But for whatever reason, the movie does everything else so well that I tend to forgive those moments. Yeah. There's a couple of scenes where, like, I could have sworn that Bryce Dallas Howard ditched her high heels halfway through the movie, and then yet at the end, she's in them and running in them. And I'm not saying that women can't run in high heels. I'm saying in that particular situation, you probably would have ditched the shoes. But there are some funny, you know, in a way, it's kind of meant to poke fun at it. Like, it's not taking itself that seriously, because there is a line where they talk about her shoes and she actually takes them off. So, like, I get it. I also really enjoy her in the role. I thought she did a really good job of, like, being this super busy, you know, corporate, like, organizer of this massive theme park that has all kinds of things they have to worry about. It's her story. It's kind of her taking for granted the danger that they're all in constantly if any of these park systems fail, right? They just haven't failed, right? So she's just feeling this blanket of security that she just shouldn't have. And when people start dying, you see that security stripped away because her nephews are out in the park stuck and she has to get Owen to go with her and go get them. And I think Dallas Howard just portrays that switch, that rug underneath her being ripped open, ripped out from underneath her so well. I also have a huge Hollywood crush on Bryce Dallas Howard. She can kind of do no wrong. I'll watch terrible movies that she's in just because I find her very charismatic and fun and she's adorable. I find that she can bring all of that into one complex role, which is really cool. Like, she can be kind of awkward because she still has a thing for Owen, but then she can be the take charge. We have to get stuff done. And then she can be the mother trying to protect the kids. Like, she just kind of wraps it all up into one. The last movie I remember seeing her in before Jurassic World, I don't know whether it was filmed before or after, but have you seen the new Pete's Dragon?
No.
It's good. It's actually, for a family film, it's actually really good. And she's in that. She plays like a forest ranger. And she, I think she's reaching out. I think it's an orphan kid. She finds Pete. And then she's the one that brings him into the town or something like that. But she's in like, you know, some like Oregon, like middle of nowhere, you know, really small town. And she's like the one forest ranger in the whole place. Or there's two of them, something like that. But it's a good little film. I really enjoyed it. I remember talking about it on this little cafe years ago. But yeah, so she's in this with Chris Pratt, and I enjoy the rest of the casting as well. I really like the way that they paint. I'm trying to remember his character's name. B.D. Wong is the actor. Henry Wu. He's the original, one of the original biologists from Jurassic Park that helped clone the dinosaurs. And he's now portrayed more as like a mad scientist. Just do not care about the outcome. It's more about whether or not I can. How can I play God? I don't care. Just pay me to play God because I am furthering the science and I don't care what you do with these
like
animals.
It's like he became hooked on creating things he shouldn't do.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole idea and the plot behind Jurassic World is that they've created the Indominus Rex, which is a combination of a bunch of different dinosaurs, including like, I think there's like cuttlefish DNA and tree frog. Like basically it sees an infrared, it can camouflage itself like a chameleon, and it's half raptor, half T-Rex. Like, just bad idea. The whole thing was just a bad idea.
It's like no one would ever want you to do this. This is a bad thing.
It's like the one chance you have to survive a T-Rex attack is the fact that it can't track you if you're not moving. And they're like, no, let's give it binocular vision. That seems like a good idea. Nope, it was not. So all that kind of stuff is in there. And that carries through to my opinion of that carries through to the other film, the Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. But I really, like I said, I really like what they did with Henry Wu.
Fallen Kingdom is the only one I didn't see. The reviews were so bad. And I was like, I'll wait for it to show up on Netflix.
So the thing about Fallen Kingdom, and unfortunately, this is my one beef with the fractured streaming setups that we all have now. I saw it in theaters, and I wanted to rewatch it when I first did the notes for these for this podcast because I wanted to talk about it, and I had to go and get it another way. The only way to watch it in Canada is on Crave on their HBO movie paywall, which is $20 a month, which, by the way, everyone listening, that's a terrible price for streaming services. $20 a month? No. Not happening. The only reason I ever did it was because I was covering Game of Thrones for this podcast, and that was the only way to get it in the 8th season, you know, reasonably.
HBO Max, the new HBO streaming service, is going to be close to that as well.
Yeah, I don't know. There's not enough there for me because I went and searched the movies and there's only a couple of movies that I want to see, and I'd have to wait for like a whole lot of stuff to back up before I spend the $20. Now, I have to say, you can start it up and stop it pretty easily. You know, like I could subscribe for 1 month, drop the 20, and then just spend the whole month doing nothing but watching HBO and Crave and probably get my money's worth. But I don't see myself as an ongoing subscription.
I have a question because I don't know if it's available in Canada. I don't know if I've brought this up to you before. Do you have Vudu in Canada?
No.
VUDU.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Because it's through Walmart of all people.
Hmm.
And they've been getting like just out of theaters or theatrical releases with this everybody being stuck at home thing. But in general, I wait, and they do sales literally every weekend and like every holiday, and they do a monthly sale. And I pick up movies digitally that I will now own for like $3 and $4.
Mm.
And then not only do I own them 4K digitally, but some of their movies are part of Movies Anywhere, which is like several services are connected to that. And if you have all of your accounts connected to Movies Anywhere, like I do, it's like all of a sudden that movie, I now own it on Amazon as well. And I also own it on Fandango, and I also own it on Google, and I also own it on, like, because I've connected all of those accounts, everything I buy, or about 60% of what I buy on Vudu ends up showing up on all of my services. And it only cost me like $5 to buy a movie.
Hmm.
Nice. And so it to the point where something will come up and it'll be like, I could go to the thing and rent this at Redbox and we could watch it and I'd have to dig out the disc. What's Vudu's rental price or buy price? Well, it's $10 to buy it and it's $5 to rent it. All right, we're going to buy it for $10. It's still, I'm going to pay $5 more, but if it's a good movie, we'll watch it again.
Yeah. I just checked. Vudu is not available in Canada. No, you have to do VPN in order to get it. Yeah.
You're missing out.
Yeah. It sounds like it. Anyway, I was able to watch Fallen Kingdom just a different way. I remember watching it in theaters, having heard that it was different, like having heard to think of it more like a monster horror movie than to think of it like a Jurassic Park movie or a Jurassic World movie. And I think one of the things that it does very well, if you think about Jurassic World as the announced trilogy with, I don't remember the name of the third one, but I mean, all that's up in the air right now with COVID-19 in terms of release dates and stuff, but it works as a kind of a throughput. Like it carries on with the mistakes and stuff that they made in Jurassic World, and Henry Wu is still making crazy dangerous dinosaurs, but they shrunk the Indominus Rex down to have more raptor-like proportions. It's still big. It's still bigger than a raptor, but it's called the Indoraptor. And they have it trained. There's only one of them. And they have it trained to follow like a laser guidance system. Like they really focused on making it a weapon. It's a weapon first and an animal second, really, the way that they have it done. My complaint about it is that I don't think it looks very cool. Like everything about it except for the head looks very odd. I find the way that the head and the teeth and the proportions are all really, really strange. It has this weird proportion to it, and it looks like it should walk on all fours, but then it doesn't. And so I found it very, very strange. The teeth are very pointy and needly, and you'd think that if it had more, I mean, even the teeth on Velociraptor seem to have more heft to them. And then of course, Tyrannosaur teeth are just ginormous. So you'd think that the thing would be mostly teeth, but it feels very, very odd. In terms of
I'm looking at it now. Yeah, the teeth don't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense, right? Like it almost feels like it's got spines for teeth instead of teeth. I'm not really, really clear on that. But they make it like hyper intelligent, and it's also not sure where it's supposed to be. Kind of in terms of like it needs a mother. There's some sort of line in the movie, but it's not reacting to pack development because it doesn't have empathy or anything to imprint on it, and so it's just a prototype. But the prototype essentially gets loose, and the whole plot about the Fallen Kingdom is that the island where the dinosaurs live is being destroyed by an active volcano that's on it, and so they're going back to try and save the animals and bring them to somewhere else. And the one of the companies, I think it's InGen or one other company, is trying to steal them all. And Eli Mills, who's one of the characters in it, who unfortunately the movie doesn't have a lot of rewatchability, because once you remember kind of like who the bad guys are in it, watching it again, it's incredibly transparent. And they don't really hide much about it. It's the worst thing about it is probably the paper thin villains, which I didn't like. The poacher, you don't like him from the moment he opens his mouth. There's no wolf in sheep's clothing. It's just wolf in wolf's clothing, you know, wolf's clothing from the get go. Same with,
they don't even try to make you like him. They go, this guy is the bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. Like even Eli Mills, he feels smarmy. Like everything just kind of, it's one of those things where like, you know, everything just feels too good to be true. This can't be good. I like James Cromwell. I watch him in all kinds of stuff. He plays Benjamin Lockwood, and Benjamin Lockwood is Hammond Hammond's old partner, and they're the ones that pioneered the science for Jurassic Park. So he's one of the fathers of the whole Jurassic Park thing. And so when Claire, Bryce Dallas Howard, goes to visit him, there's this like moment of reverence and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of a cool setup, but it turns into these dinosaurs are loose on the mainland, and it ends up being kind of like a horror film and more interesting than just being back stuck on the island, which is the first act. The first act is them right. stuck back on the island. But then all the dinosaurs that are left on the island die because the volcano erupts. But those that can fly get out. Those that can swim get out. Most of the other ones are captured on this barge, and they're being off to be sold into private black market stuff. So it had some interesting, you know, saving the world, you know, messages about, like, you know, poaching and environmental concerns and all this kind of stuff. So it had some overworld tones to it, some real world, you know, our problems that I thought were good. But I remember, so this is kind of a spoiler if you haven't seen it, but the granddaughter, Macy Lockwood, they talk about her as a granddaughter to Benjamin Lockwood, and she's a clone. She's a clone of his daughter that died in a car accident. And that's the thing that drove Lockwood and Hammond apart, which is why you've never heard of Lockwood before. And, right. and they handle that really well. One of the things, when I remember it, of course, it's not that much of a mystery, but when you're watching the film, there's all these really subtle hints that, you know, that you kind of clue into later on when it's revealed, you know, that she's actually a clone. And one of the coolest things that they do is at the end of the film, again, spoilers, there's a gas leak. All the dinosaurs that are in cages in the basement are going to die unless you open the doors and let them all loose. But if by doing that, you are on mainland North America. I don't know where the compound is for Lockwood, but it's like you're in the USA somewhere. I want to say west. Anyway, they open up the door and they let the animals loose. And this is the thing that I like about the movie, is that it sets up the next film where, for the first time in Jurassic Park ever, we're not going back to the island because we don't have to.
It's going
to
be here.
Because everything is on the mainland. And I think we're going to have to deal with how humans are dealing with these animals, potentially breeding and potentially being, you know, out there like coyotes and bears and everything else. And what they do is, instead of that responsibility falling on Owen Grady or Claire Dearing, the two main characters in the film, who you think are going to do it, and Claire comes real close, but then she just thinks about all the human lives and she stops. But then Macy hits the button and opens up the doors. So the responsibility is not on Owen Grady or Claire. They weren't looking. They couldn't control Macy. Macy was, you know, they thought she was a scared little 12-year-old and she wasn't going to do anything. But
yeah.
Macy kind of clues in that the dinosaurs are clones, just like she's a clone, and they deserve to live. And so that was her, you know, so it's all on Macy. So it's going to be really interesting to see where the character Macy is, even if she is in the next movie, where she is, you know, in terms of the whole scheme of everything, how Chris right. Pratt as like an animal wrangler is going to be in there. I should say Chris, but Owen Grady, and how Claire Dearing is dealing with all this stuff. Like, it's just really, really cool the way that they handled everything and brought everything together.
It sounds like they maybe had to do a less good movie to get the third, possibly better movie out.
So this is the thing. It's not a bad film. It's just a different film for Jurassic Park. And just like everything else, they have to come up with some harebrained idea to get everybody back. And one of the reasons why Owen Grady goes back is because Claire has developed a real conscience for these animals and she wants to go back and save them. And because she's going, and because he loves her, he's going. But they make you think that he's not going to go. And they do a really good job of maintaining that, like, we tried it, it didn't work, but we still have feelings for each other, but we're not sure. And they don't string it on too long. They give you just enough. And the chemistry there between Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, it's really, really good. They did a good job of like pushing that forward and whatever. But like, the thing that I find so interesting about these is that the special effects now have just gotten so good that even though I wasn't a fan of the Indoraptor, you don't question that it's after them. You don't question that it's in the room. You know, like you just, when the Pachycosaurus is bashing through brick walls, like you don't think about that as a, as an effect, you're like, man, that looks dangerous. You know, like people are, cars are getting flipped over and stuff like that. Like it just, it's a really cool, really cool way that they make everything work. I think in the fifth film. Yeah. Fifth film. So, I'm glad that the franchise is continuing. They're fun. They're really fun. And, Jurassic Park 2 aside, I would say they're all worth rewatching. Jurassic Park 2, you kind of have to watch to get.
But you can roll your eyes every time you feel like it.
Yeah, you can have it on in the background. Just going in knowing that it's a terrible film. I'm really curious about the third Jurassic World because Sam Neill, Laura Dern, I believe Ian Malcolm there. What's his name?
Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum is back.
They've all agreed to be in it.
Yeah. Hopefully for more than just bit parts. I don't want them to be just like cameos. I'm hoping that they have like a little bit more going on. Cause yeah, like I'm looking forward to the third one. I think my favorite out of all of them is actually Jurassic World. I think that's probably my favorite film because it's got a modern feel to it but with some classic storytelling. So, but yeah, highly recommend the dinosaurs, folks. Go check them out. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can find out more information about the things that Lou and I talked about today at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show was, of course, composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. Subscribe on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, and now YouTube as well. You can also share the podcast with your friends via word of mouth or just, you know, waving and shouting across the street. Because we can't do much more these days, but I would really appreciate it if you like the show, if you want to share it around, because it's one of the best ways for the podcast to reach new listeners. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. We are listener supported. There's no ads on the podcast, and it's because of you fine people that we can continue to do that. So check it out at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. You can also check out my Twitch stream at twitch.tv/joelduggan. Imagine that. I just streamed this afternoon. If you're wondering why my voice is a little bit hoarse, it's because I've been talking for like 6 hours. But I had fun. We are working on some really fun stuff in Minecraft. I'm streaming some new video games. The PC is back up and running the way that it should. Well, it's running to the point where I can stream regularly again. So I'm looking forward to doing more. That's at twitch.tv/joelduggan. And the other podcast I do is the Spun Chunks at thespunchunks.com. We are getting a new snapshot pretty much weekly now. So there's always some new things to talk about in Minecraft. Check that out. Lou, where can people find you and all of the fun stuff that you're doing online?
The easiest place to find me is on all the social media that matters under the name Busy Zombie Lord. And you can check out my show, Zombies Ate My Podcast, every 2 weeks. We've got another episode coming up next week where Ryan and I will be talking about the new Resident Evil 3 remake game. We got some opinions. So if Resident Evil is your thing, we're definitely going to talk about that next week.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.